And the Buddha found many different ways of categorizing our experience. And in a way, each of them are different doorways into understanding reality and understanding the nature of conditioned reality. And the four foundations of mindfulness really encompass the whole of our experience: body, feeling, tone, mind, and dhammas, or objects of mind, or principles. And in this framework of the Satipatthana, it's like he's leading us in gradually, starting with the more coarse and tangible experience of the body, and leading us to notice, become aware of feeling tones, which are hugely influential in how we relate to life. So, we if we're not conscious, we're just continuously reacting from feeling tones that arise in the body and mind, and then the citta, the mind itself. And the Buddha points out different states of mind. In the Satipatthana, he's pointing out states that are more limited, and those that are vast and expansive. And I want to just read out the list to you. And the practice is to be mindful, to have clear comprehension, to know what is present right now. The mind goes through many different moods. And part of also the practice is to notice how this changes and how it's conditioned. I'm just going to read. This is from the Satipatthana Sutta. One knows a mind with lust to be a mind with lust, or one knows a mind without lust to be a mind without lust, or one knows a mind with anger to be a mind with anger. Or one knows a mind without anger to be a mind without anger. Or one knows a mind with delusion to be a mind with delusion. Or one knows a mind without delusion to be a mind without delusion. Or one knows a contracted mind to be a contracted mind. Or one knows a distracted mind to be a distracted mind. So I think this is important that he's not just saying one knows a mind of with lust to be a mind with lust, and one knows a mind with anger to be a mind with anger, and so on. But he's also saying one knows a mind without lust to be without lust, and one knows a mind without anger to be without anger, and so on. So I think we can often overlook this. So he's inviting us to really be aware and attentive to what is state of the mind right now. And this is a that list is in our, let's say, in our ordinary daily life, going about things, we can pay attention to: is there anger present right now? Is there lust present right now? Is there delusion present right now? Is the mind contracted? Is the mind distracted? So I found that really helpful, that sometimes the mind's distracted, and I know, I really need to focus on something, and my mind's quite distracted, and then I can just say, oh yeah, the mind's distracted. And rather than getting like more caught in a distraction or getting into a fight with the distraction, to then just be aware, like, okay, the mind is distracted. What do I need to do now? Is it okay for it to be distracted, or do I need to rein it in because I actually need to focus then? I noticed that this morning, shortly before coming into the room here, my mind is a bit distracted and pulled in different directions, and then, distracted mind. And just to know it for what it is, not, oh, I'm so bad, I shouldn't be distracted, or I should be better than that by now, but just like, okay, the mind's distracted, it needs to be guided in the direction of more focus and settling. And then one can also, go through that list and, well, is there lust present? Like, well, no, not right now. Is there anger present? No, there's no anger right now. And then we just know it for what it is. Or if there is, you know, if there is anger present and so on, then one takes care around that, so that it doesn't spill out and cause harm to ourselves and others. And then there are higher states of mind that he also lists. So I'm just going to read them too. One knows a mind that has become great to be a mind that has become great. One knows a mind that has not become great to be a mind that has not become great. This is in terms of like expansiveness, not about being, you know, a great leader or a great person or something like that, but the mind expanding. One knows a surpassable mind to be a surpassable mind, or one knows an unsurpassable mind to be an unsurpassable mind, or one knows a concentrated mind to be a concentrated mind, or one knows a not concentrated mind to be a not concentrated mind, or one knows a liberated mind to be a liberated mind, or one knows a not liberated mind to be a not liberated mind. So I'm sure people will be saying, wanting to know, well, so what is a surpassable mind and what is an unsurpassable mind? And I can't give you definitive answers, so please don't ask me. But these are states that we can experience when there's letting go, when the mind lets go of those five hindrances and moves into states of openness and concentration or collectedness and liberation. And you know, there's the ultimate liberation of nirvana, but there's also the temporary liberation of the mind through cultivating the Brahma Viharas, and also through turning the mind towards the mind, like being the awareness, and being the knowing. So there are different ways that through our skillful attention, through guiding the mind in a skillful way, that we can, that the heart and mind can experience that liberation from the limitations that we live in, you know, much of the time in our daily life. So you may have experienced these in meditation. It may have been like once and it was a big aha moment, or it may be something you can drop into. Or you may have just heard about it and know that it's a possibility, have faith that it's accessible. So when we cultivate the mind in such a way that in our meditation, first of all, we need to know what is going on, what we're starting with. And then we can guide our attention towards letting go. So it's the letting go that brings expansiveness and the peace. And it's the grasping that keeps things tight. So grasping for beautiful states of mind leads to dukkha. So we don't want to go that way. It's a cultivating and a letting go. And I really appreciate the Buddha's compassion in acknowledging all of those states and just saying, just know them, bring sati, bring awareness to all of those states. It's not saying you should always be in a state of sublime peace, you know. It's saying no when the mind is filled with lust, no when it's filled with anger, no when it's distracted, no when it's contracted, no when it's great or expansive, no when it's liberated, even if it's a temporary liberation. And it's also, this points to the fact that the mind is constantly changing, that these states are changing all the time, and yet we so easily take them to be who and what we are. So just to through this day, that our practice will be you know, turning back towards our own mind and being aware of our mind and where it leans to, where it goes, where it is right now, and then cultivating tools for turning the mind towards the wholesome. So I wish you and us all a very good day of practice today. And I'd like to pass over to Aya Sensitchitta, who's going to guide us in a meditation now.
I'd just like to start with a poem. It's in the book on page 79. And it's Venerable Gutta Bhikkhuni speaking. And the name means guardian. And she speaks about the going forth. And for you, you could understand that as just start, you know, going into the practice. Going forth is no game. We leave whole lives behind, not just people and possessions. All your wants, all your fears, all the little rituals that get you through the day and tuck you in at night. Only see that all these pretty wooden pieces aren't you and don't belong to you. They belong to the game. I know it's comforting to count up all the squares, run your fingers along the edge of the board and plan out all your moves ahead of time. The world beyond the table only seems dark, like empty space. It's okay to be afraid. That is what Ananda Bodhi was speaking about. You know, the Buddha didn't instruct us not to have difficult emotions, but he instructed us to know them when they are present and to know when they are not present. That's really what the practice is all about. And often, you know, the what's called the afflictive emotions are connected with a contraction in the body, like a way of, you know, grasping the chaos energy inside we experience to be inside ourselves. And then, you know, the practice would be actually to notice the grasping and to apply certain practices in order to open up, to let go of that grasping. ABC practice, a bigger context or a bigger container. And for example, the four Brahmaviharas, the four divine abidings, they are very helpful, you know, if the mind is really very contracted and the body also, to apply those. Or, for example, also the first foundation of mindfulness, to ground the body by, for example, going through the elements or the body parts. That's a good way to begin the practice. And then once we are really well settled, then going into the Brahmaviharas. And I like to guide us in such a meditation now. And we are starting with, you know, becoming aware of earth element inside of ourselves and also the whole planet itself. So then we see ourselves as part of something much bigger than just me and my story. And then after we have established that recognition and the grounding, then we are looking at the mind. And then once the mind is reasonably settled as well, we can open up into Brahmavihara. And then at the end of the meditation, we are again, you know, turning towards impermanence. So then, you know, that covers all four foundations of mindfulness, we could say. And with a particular attention to the mind and to skillful means, how we can support the mind to connect with the spaciousness, which is always already here, but we can, you know, get hijacked into all kinds of stories, and then we forget about this. So please find a posture you can sustain for about 35 minutes or so. And we start with a body scan. And first, I just like you to tap your teeth together and get a direct experience of earth element, hardness, solidity, structure. And then we can just start with the head, you know, that perception of hardness, earth element, the skull bones, including the teeth, they're the tip of the bones, we can say. Then we go down through the neck, shoulder bones, the upper arm, lower arms, the bones in there, and then the many little bones in the hands, earth element. And then coming to the torso, the spine, and the rib cage. The hip bones, thigh bones, very big bones, lower leg bones, and the many little bones in the feet, earth element. And just, you know, flashing the skeleton as a whole, the white bones, the earth element. And then we can feel, you know, the earth element in the form of the cushion or the chair we are sitting on, is external earth element, so to say, conventionally speaking. And we feel like the gravity keeps us connected to the planet, and, you know, relaxing into that gravity, into the earth element, which is deep and huge. There's a certain peace coming from that hugeness. Breathing in that peacefulness, the equanimity of the earth. You know, knowing that we are in constant exchange with this planet. Earth element in the way of eating and going to the bathroom, but also water element, fire element, through the sun as well, and air element. Air is produced by the plants. What an amazing miracle we are part of every moment. And just relaxing into that mystery. Because indeed it is a mystery, and, you know, science has found out a lot of things and a lot of data and a lot of facts, but the whole, how that is all working, is not comprehensible by the thinking mind. But in the meditation, we can intuitively get a whiff of it. And then when the mind gets this intuitive whiff, you know, it just happily opens up, gives up, really trying to think it all through because it can't be done. It doesn't need to be done. At least for now. Breathing in that peace which comes from the huge planet Earth we are sitting on. Depths of the planet. Then, the mind might start to wander off into thinking about something. When you notice that, you gently bring the mind back to, where your body connects with the cushion or the chair, where you feel that sense of gravity, weight, hardness, earth element. And earth element internally and earth element externally is exactly the same. So if the mind wanders off just for a moment, then gently bring it back with a smile, because that's what the mind does. Because the mind is one of the six sense organs and its work is to do the thinking, and that's what it does. Same as the eyes see and the nose smells, the mind thinks. If the mind wanders off for a longer while, it's good to discern, what was the feeling tone just right now when you were wandering off. To try to discern that and then, oh, pleasant feeling, and then a story might spin around it about how to have more of that pleasant feeling. And if it was an unpleasant feeling tone, story might spin around it about aversion. And, if mindfulness isn't strong and the mind is just dull, illusion. If it neither fits into aversion or greed, then it can just notice it as delusion, neutral feeling tone. If you do that, we can really see, how the conditionality of this process, there's nothing much personal in it. And if we, learn to recognize the underlying feeling tone, as I said yesterday, it gives us a quick handle on a situation in terms of, stopping and checking what is the wholesome response here. And that can also be very, very helpful in daily life, of course. We have to start to learn it on the cushion, and then we can take it with us out into our lives. Just pinpointing what is the feeling tone which motivated me, into this train of thinking or that train of thinking, and then maybe even speaking and acting. getting a handle on that. And then seeing, you know, the universality of that. Of course, everybody wants pleasant feeling, and everybody doesn't want unpleasant feeling, or at least most people. And that's not just your problem or my problem, that's just the way it is. Even, you know, anybody, animals, very basic forms of life, like amoebas, want pleasant and not unpleasant. Just make friends with that fact that we are not exempt from that fate, you know, because we have animal bodies and they are like this. But we can learn how to handle them well, train them. So, and if the mind is free from any of this preoccupations for a time, then just, you know, rejoicing in the relief of the temporary liberated mind. There's a sense of joy, subtle joy, of being in the present moment, just being fully with what is, not wanting anything, or not wanting anything not to be. Just that spaciousness and that peacefulness of being okay with what is. Resting in that. This subtle joy is something we need to train ourselves to be able to actually recognize. It is a very healing and soothing joy. An unworldly joy, how it's spoken about in the scriptures, because it's independent from any of the senses. It doesn't come from eating chocolate or listening to beautiful music, or, you know, any other things we could do. It just comes from being fully with the way things are. Without any extra also a sense of contentment. And in our day and age, you know, with its tremendous speed and complexity, we really need to make an effort to not lose that. So really, you know, making much of that sense of relief which comes from the temporary abeyance of the hindrances. And my first teacher, Ajahn Buddhadasa, he called that little nibbanas, like a taste of nibbana, like a little sample. When you go to the supermarket, you can have a little piece of cookie so that you might buy the whole box. That's the same thing, a little bite so that you might be inspired to keep on moving along the path. So, and then we can go to the next point in the guided meditation, which is, you know, using that sense of subtle joy, which comes from fully being in the present moment. And we are bringing up an image of a situation or of a person, you know, which who is in difficulty right now. And wishing this person or situation absence of harm, and, you know, feeling a sense of wanting to protect and wanting that being or that situation experience that same sense of spaciousness and subtle joy as we are experiencing right now. And that's what is, you know, called karuna. May all beings be from harm, be free from harm and the intention to harm. And just see, you know, if we bring that up into the mind, just see how the mind responds. In my case, you know, I can really feel that it's getting more spacious. And in the heart area, there's like a feeling of what I would call compassion. May all beings be free from harm and the intention to harm. Just allowing that feeling of compassion in your heart area to, with the in-breath, really taking it on and feeling it. And with the out-breath, just gently allowing it to go out in space, its own time, and however far it likes to go. May all beings be free from harm and the intention to harm. The in-breath and with the out-breath, relaxing into space. Like a light which radiates out in all directions, all around, above and below. And you're sitting on planet Earth and sitting inside of an orb of compassion. Which includes the planet also, and all beings living on it and in it and above it. And you know, if you're checking your mind right now, you can feel, you know, how naturally it just becomes spacious. And then whatever problems, you know, there have been, they are still there, but they are just much smaller now. Because we see it in context. So with the in-breath, we connect with the feeling of compassion, and with the out-breath, we just let it radiate. Boundless compassion. And then, you know, whatever problem we have started with, if we have that bigger space, there is a space for creativity to come through, for just the simple new ways of being with that issue, maybe a response. It doesn't come from the thinking mind, but comes from a different place. May all beings be free from harm and the intention to harm. You know, that state of mind, that might be what Ananda Bodhi was mentioning about, you know, the unsurpassable mind. Because the mind is great, immeasurable. Just for this time, temporarily. And all of the afflictive emotions, the root defilements, they have just gone into abeyance. They are still here, but they are dormant right now. And also through this kind of practice, you know, they are getting slowly but surely washed away a little bit every time. And then, you know, we have said for some time with the compassion, we just turn the compassion towards equanimity, equipoise, sense of perspective. And equanimity or equipoise, the sentence, you know, we could think about is, may all beings take responsibility for their lives and their happiness and their actions. And that's like a different feeling in the heart area. It's more cool, but also like clear. And then turning that clarity towards impermanence. Permanence of the process of breathing. Body, earth, mind, it's always a flux, a flow. And, you know, by paying attention in this way, allowing this passion to manifest. And a washing away of clinging through seeing the flow and flux. And permeability of all so-called things, their processes. All part of a much vaster process than the mind could ever conceive of. So allowing that the seeing of impermanence wash away the clinging. Wash away the craving. And if the, you know, the craving is diminished, there's more capacity of seeing the ending of things. So, you know, when we are caught up in an afflictive emotion and there's this sense, I have to do it now, I have to fix it now, I have to. Then we can remember it's going to end because we have seen it often enough. We are confident that impermanence is operating. We don't have to make it go away. So, you know, that's what the fruit is of allowing the craving to be washed away through the insight into impermanence. We have more and more capacity to see a whole process from the beginning through the middle to the end. And that gives us a sense of staying power, equanimity, all of the seven factors of awakening get stronger and stronger. Mindfulness, investigation of dhammas, energy, joy, tranquility, stability of mind, and equipoise or sense of perspective. And then for the towards the end of the meditation, we can reflect on what's called the cutting edge of impermanence, which is, this could be my last breath. What do I want to do with my life if this would be my last breath? So with the in-breath, you know, bringing up that thought, and with the out-breath, just relaxing into the space. And if we look at this, you know, if we look at death in a with a mind state of spaciousness, it becomes very clear that death is part of life. And death is not the opposite of life. Death comes with birth. Death is part of life. And allowing that to be integrated is a sense, gives a sense of healing, a sense of aliveness, and also a sense of motivation. You know, what do I want to do? What is really important here? What is really important is not to squander the opportunity of having a life and having, you know, found the teachings and having time to apply and to learn to apply them. For our own good and for the good of others. So really rejoicing in this temporary liberation of the mind. You know, gaining more and more familiarity with that temporary liberation. More and more confidence, yes, this is something I can tap into. And it all, you know, starts with just simply grounding ourselves by acknowledging earth element, for example, or you know, we can just be aware of the body breathing. There's so many ways how that can be done. And then, you know, slowly opening up, but being fully grounded at the same time. And then you know, we come back to the sense of gravity, which we can feel, you know, where the body meets the cushion or the chair, the sense of hardness and gravity. Because we are here, yeah, on this planet, and all of the issues, you know, which are coming up into our lives, they are all sharpening stones for the seven factors of awakening. And then, you know, really acting from that what we know to be true. Really enacting that in the world. Because only, you know, the cultivation of the mind is not enough. We also have to physically live it and speak it and all the rest of it. That's the path. So now there's.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.